Hello and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show. Today is Sunday, February 19th, 2017. Today's update, I believe, is going to mostly be about H7N9. It was reported on Thursday that a sequence at GSAB was released that there was an export to Taiwan, that they had a high-pass avian influenza, and as most people know, high pass has never been reported at all in any public database for the H7N9 in China. And looks like we might have it in some other places too, but Dr. Nyman will give you all the information. So, Dr. Nyman, welcome back to the program today.
Okay, Ryan, thanks. It's good to be back. This is kind of a breaking news type of report. Things have developed fairly dramatically in the last few days. As you mentioned, the H7N9 high pass sequence was released on Thursday morning. I did an update Thursday night on the Jeff Frentz show. I do a kind of a interview there, usually about an hour, and it's usually 10 o'clock, and on the third Thursday of the month, and this happened to be the third Thursday, so I was going to talk about H5N8 and switch it over to H7N9, so there's a little bit of information in that podcast, which actually is linked in at the recombinomic.co website at Dr. Nyman's Corner. It's the most recent post on that thread. And it's got an MP3, and they take out commercials, so it's about 40 minutes long or so. And so that kind of gave the background of what had happened on Thursday. I kind of mentioned it was breaking news because nobody actually had reported it. It was a sequence that showed up at GSAD, and it was published fairly quickly. This was a businessman in Taiwan who had traveled to Guangdong province, developed some symptoms just before he left, came back to Taiwan. He initially was negative for H7N9, and then he subsequently developed more severe case symptoms, went back, and was tested again. And I think it was on February 3rd or 4th, he was H7 confirmed. The sample that was sequenced was actually collected then. And about 10 days later, on Thursday morning, the full sequence was released. And as listeners recall, H7N9 is typically low path. The low pathogenicity is based upon a test with chickens, experimental chickens, that essentially it doesn't really produce deaths in the chickens, and they are only moderately, if at all, symptomatic. And as a result, the way a pathogenicity test works is 10 experimental chickens, and they're infected with a virus and then monitored for 10 days, and they're scored every 24 hours. And if they have no evidence of disease, their score is a zero. If they die, they score a three. And, if they have moderate symptoms, they're a one. If they have severe symptoms, they're a two. And cutoff is 1.2. So you kind of add up all the scores for all 10 chickens for all 10 days. And then you divide by 100 and you get a score. If the chickens don't show any symptoms for the whole time, then, the pathogenicity number is actually zero. If they all die within 24 hours, then the number would be three. That's the high, 3.0 is the highest. And the high path is typically, especially for the Asian version, is typically in the neighborhood of 2.5 or so. So it's well above the cutoff for high pass. And in Asia, especially with the H5, they typically have a polybasic cleavage site, which has quite a few, five or six basic amino acids right before where the cleavage happens. The cleavage is required for viral entry into the into the cell that it's infecting. And the low path has a fairly simple sequence instead of the in front of the cleavage point. It's just like it's usually RETR. So the enzyme that cleaves it is right after that second R is right in front of a GLF sequence. And so it's well known what the normal low path cleavage site looks like. And so if there's multiple basic amino acids in front, and in H5N1, that's the initial one that was reported in clade 1 in Vietnam in late 2003, is RERRRKKR. R's and K's are basic, so it's a dramatic difference between RETR and RERRRKKR. So there's a lot more basic amino acids. The Fujian strain is missing one of those K's, so it's RERRRKR. But, you know, there's a lot of basic amino acids that show up. So the hemagglutinin, the H5, is a little bit bigger than the low path. And so you can see it on a gel that is bigger. If you know how many amino acids or nucleotides are in the sequence, you can know just from that number, as long as it's from the start codon to the termination codon. And so it was kind of obvious that something was going on when the sequence was released at TSAD on Thursday morning. It was the first case in Taiwan this season. In fact, it's the first case since 2014. Most of the activity is in China. And 2013, they had two cases that were imported from China, and in 2014, there were two more. There weren't any in 2015 or 16, and then this showed up in 2017. And typically, most of the sequences out of China, for the H, they usually just start at the start codon and end at the termination codon for the protein. And so for H7, that would typically be 1,683 nucleotides. And this sequence was 1,695, so it was 12 nucleotides larger than normal. When I first saw it, I thought that they just included a little bit of a sequence before the initiation or after the termination. But when I took a look, the 1695 started with the initiation and ended with the termination. So it ended, there was an additional 12 nucleotides, which would mean there was additional 4 amino acids somewhere in that sequence. And took a look at the sequence, and turned out those 4 amino acids were right in front of the cleavage site, and it generated a polybasic cleavage site with KRKRTAR. So, that's basically five basic amino acids when there's normally 2. So it had 3 additional basic amino acids there. And generally, that many basic amino acids in front of the cleavage site generates a high path version. And as Ryan mentioned, there's never been a high-path version of H7N9. In fact, I don't think there's been one reported anywhere, not just in China, but there definitely hasn't been one in China. China has always had low-path. And that's species-specific. If you recall back when H5N1 was making a lot of headlines in Vietnam and beginning in late 2003 and moving into 2004, the virus that was identified was clade 1, and it had this polybasic cleavage site, but what was noted is that it was in the test, of course, it was high path because that's done with experimental chickens. When out in the field, it was noticed that chickens died very quickly, and the virus spread very rapidly on farms. But there were asymptomatic ducks, so the ducks basically had a lot of virus. If you looked at the pleocal swabs or you looked at fecal samples, there was lots of H5N1 in there, but the ducks were asymptomatic, and that created major problems because it wouldn't be obvious where the virus was if it was on a duck farm, and it also wouldn't be obvious to the farmers that were raising those ducks. So that would invariably lead to human cases of people that, in many instances, just got infected while preparing a slaughtered duck for dressing. And that's one of the reasons that there were human cases, is the people were exposed to H5N1 and had no idea because the animals did not show any symptoms. So there is evidence of this species difference. And there's some differences in the different strains. And in 2005 at Qinghai Lake, there was a large die-off of long-range waterfowl, and including barheaded geese. And that stood out because, in contrast to the clade one, this H5N1 seemed to be able to produce mortality in waterfowl, and that raised concern. Since they were long range, that would spread with the birds when they would go up to Siberia and Mongolia for the summer, and then they would fly south. And the worry was that they would spread the virus, which in fact did happen. And that was kind of the precursor to H5N1 breaking out of Asia, and which was in China, countries that were largely to the west or south of China, and that moved it into Europe and the Middle East and Africa, and that Qinghai strain is still circulating in Egypt and Israel and causing human cases, at least in Egypt. So there is concern about high path H5N1, and but what happened with H7N9 in China was low path, at the H7. Didn't have the polybasic cleavage site and was low path, and which is what made this sequence that popped up in Taiwan so unusual. As there really was no other sequence in humans or poultry, and there have been quite a few sequences generated. I mean, in 2013, H7N9 started causing human cases with a fairly high case fatality rate. And even though they were low payoff in birds, they did have a 30-40% case fatality rate in humans. And that's probably in part because position 225 has got a G, which actually targets GAL2-3 receptors, which in the case of humans is on human lungs. And so it ends up allowing the virus to readily infect human lungs. And so even if you get infected with a low-path virus, if that virus is in the lungs and replicating, that can lead to severe complications, including pneumonia and organ failure if it infects a bunch of different organs after it grows high concentrations and the like. So there's a little bit of a species specificity as far as the pathogenicity is concerned. The low path has been what's been present in China up until last Thursday was the first case. And so we get a little summary Thursday because it was obvious in the sequence, but it was also fairly obvious that nobody else was reporting this. So Taiwan didn't issue any press releases. Guangdong, which is where the businessman was likely infected, that's where he traveled, they didn't say anything. And so it was breaking news. And then yesterday, a sequence was released from Guangdong Province from a case who actually was infected in January. And the sequence had the same cleavage site. So Thursday was the first sequence made public, and Saturday night actually was the second sequence made public. Both had links to Guangdong Province. But and they both had full sequences, and this was done by the Guangdong CDC. And it showed that although it had the same cleavage site and the H5s were fairly closely related, several of the other gene segments were not at all closely related. So it was not that there was a virus in Guangdong and it was spreading and was found in two different people that were linked to Guangdong. There was a virus in Guangdong, and it was being selected, and it was on multiple backgrounds. So these represented two different backgrounds, indicating that it might be fairly widespread. Although both of these cases, one lived in Guangdong Province, the other visited Guangdong Province. The two locations in Guangdong Province really are not close to each other, and they're now on the H7N9 map. Take a look at that and see where they are, but they really are fairly far apart. So you had two different people infected with a high path H7N9 that were in southern China, but geographically distinct areas. And the full sequences from both isolates indicated that the viruses were quite distinct. They were both H7N9. The H7s were fairly closely related. The N9s really were not that closely related, and several of the internal genes were distinct. So they represented distinct reassortants, but they both had the H7 that was high path. And then that was followed by a press release today. And then the press release today indicated that there were two other cases that were identified in Guangdong Province, and that were H7N9 and had a high path. The two earlier cases, the one in Taiwan initially was mild, but the latest report was that he was in critical condition in the case that generated the sequence that was released last night. It was actually a fatal case. The two additional cases that were cited in the press release, one has already been discharged, so it seems to be a milder case and not either of the two that had sequences released. And then the other one was still in the hospital, but was not in critical condition, so that didn't match the other two either. So that would indicate that there are at least four cases that either are clearly high path based upon the polybasic cleavage site of the sequence that was released, or a high path based upon the description of the cleavage site, which was in the press release. Now, the press release also noted that the Agriculture Department had four samples that had the same, they called it an insertion. They didn't give any more detail, so it's not really clear where these two human cases are, other than somewhere in Guangdong Province. And it's not clear of the four poultry samples, whether they're all from a single farm or single live market, or if they represent multiple examples. But one thing they did mention in the press release is that the poultry had died. And so even though there's no reports yet that have been made public on what the pathogenicity index is and whether it indeed is above 1.2, the fact that some of the birds had died, or maybe in fact all four of the birds had died, would indicate that this not only has the polybasic cleavage site, which is indicative of a high path H7N9, but that the infected poultry in Guangdong province were actually dying, and which further confirmed that it was high path. And then recently there was a report of a case in Shandong province, which is in northern China, and that was a 48-year-old female, and she did have contact with about 100 birds that she raised, and they said that the report said the 4 to 5 had died, raising the distinct possibility that the high path H7N9 is in 4 individuals and 4 birds in Guangdong province is also in Shandong, which is in northern China. It's actually north of Shanghai, so it's nowhere near Guangdong province in southern China. And it raises the possibility that this high path is fairly widespread. And it surprised me because there were some human sequences that were released a couple of weeks ago from both northern China and southern China. And none of those sequences, I think there were 6 to 8 human sequences. These were all collected, or at least most were collected in 2016. I think a few were in 2017. But they all look kind of like the H7N9 that had been reported previously. Since 2013, they most of them actually did have E67K for the PV2, which is a human adaptation. And they also have a human adaptation. Some had a human adaptation at position 701, and one of them actually had changes at both of those positions. So those were concerns because, if you recall back on the gain-of-function studies, the simplest one was actually using an H5N1 from the first case in Indonesia, and there were 3 changes that were done: 2 changes of the receptor binding domain on the H5, one at position 226 and one at position 228, and then the PB2 was changed, which is the polymerase gene, to E67K, which allows the polymerase to be most active at 33 degrees, in contrast to the bird version, which is most active at 41 degrees centigrade. And a 41 degrees centigrade is the body temperature of a bird. 33 is a little bit below the 37 degrees, which is the body temperature of a mammal. And therefore, this change is really a mammalian adaptation and allows the virus to copy its genetic information more quickly at the lower mammalian temperature. And so that's been one of the features of these, most of the H7N9s, is they have the PB2, which is adapted to mammals. And they also had position 226, which changed from Q to L, which is one of the changes that was done in these gain-of-function studies, and that change was really based upon changes in prior pandemics, where the avian version changed both of those positions, 226 and 228, which gave rise to a human pandemic, actually. First, it was in 1957, which was H2N2, and then that was followed by 1968, which was H3N2. And those changes happened and allowed for rapid human-to-human transmission, and that's why there's always been a concern that the H7N9 in China could become much more transmissible if it gained that third change. And unfortunately, that third change is circulating in H6N1 in Taiwan. And so having H7N9 in Taiwan is not a good situation because they could recombine with H6N1 and generate that receptor binding domain that would have changes at both T26 and T28. And recombination is the likely reason that this plebiscite started to appear in Guangdong province, and it may be appearing now in Shandong if these chickens that were dying are dying from H7N9, and the H7N9 has got a polybasic plebiscite. It seems reasonable that it may be the exact same polybasic plebiscite that has been reported in Guangdong province. So that pretty much brings things up to date. So just in summary, there are two sequences that have been made public. One is from Taiwan of a businessman who visited Guangdong province and is in critical condition. The second is from a case in Guangdong province, in different locations in the businessman, but that patient is had died, so that was a fatal infection. Both of them have the identical polybasic plebiscite of KR, KR, TAR. And the dead poultry, the four samples in Guangdong province suggest that it is high path in probably at least chickens. It's not clear how many species it is high path in. And the two cases that are cited in the press release, it sounds like they're somewhat milder. One may have already been discharged. And so it's not clear whether this polybasic plebiscite is going to have a major effect on the presentations of human cases. But it does sound like it could have a significant effect on poultry and could be devastating to the Chinese poultry markets if the virus is widespread and killing birds. And the sequences from the two human cases suggest it is widespread because it's present in two very different viruses. And if the H7N9 in Shandong province in northern China is high path, which is why the chickens died, and it has the same plebiscite, that would indicate that this plebiscite spread very dramatically or very quickly. That would suggest that there's selection for it, and if there's selection for it, then it's probably going to continue to spread fairly quickly, and it could be a whole new wave. Now, on the human side, right now, the human cases have made the news because there were record number of cases in December and then another record number in January. Some of the reports are suggesting that the number of cases is now starting to decline, but it's conceivable that this new version, this high path version, is just getting started, and so there could conceivably be two waves this season. There's the initial wave, which was early, which has got the low path H7N9, and then that's followed by a high path H7N9. So there could be a record number of human cases, and so how quickly this high path will spread in poultry, and how easily it'll infect humans, and how severe it'll be in humans are all kind of open questions. But what is clear is that this virus has never been reported before. There are at least four human cases in Guangdong province, and the virus is lethal to chickens. So I expect that this story will become much more widespread because it is a dramatic change, and China will increase its surveillance, which shouldn't really be that hard if the chickens are really dying. That's one of the problems with the low path is the surveillance has to be fairly aggressive because the birds are asymptomatic. And I would expect there'll be more reports in the upcoming days. So that's it on our breaking news.
Okay, well, thank you for the information. listeners can always visit the website, reconomics.cl, for all the latest information, as always. Lots of maps up there, and I'm sure we'll be having more on this soon. Thank you, and have a good day.